Coming to you live from the studios of AM 1520 KVTA, Ventura County's inspiration station, this is The Kim Pagano Show. Kim is Ventura County's mom and so much more, bringing value every day in every way. Join Kim and her friends every Saturday as they interview interesting and inspirational guests, everyone from authors and entertainers to doctors and experts. From A to Z, Kim's got you covered. Call Kim now to share your journey, 805-289-1520. And now, here's Ventura County's mom and so much more. It's Kim Pagano.
Welcome, welcome, welcome. You are listening to The Kim Pagano Show, and I welcome you. And I am your host. I am Kim Pagano. And today we are talking about life. And life is always a choice unless you're bewitched. And we are actually going to be talking with, the author, Herbie Pilato. And his new book is Twitched Upon a Star, The Bewitched Life of Elizabeth Montgomery, and her career and kind of who she was. So I'm kind of excited. It's one of my favorite shows as growing up. I always wish I could just have that little twitch on, you know, my family or what I was doing, or I don't know. Anyways, but we got lots to do today. My next guest is going to be Eric Papp, and his book is Leadership by Choice, all about self-management. And then we will be talking to Roland Reeve, who is another amazing acupuncture. He's got a whole studio, which is called Natural Healthcare Center in Thousand Oaks. So we're going to be talking with him a little bit. And he is in studio with us. So welcome, and thank you so much for being a part of my show.
Thank you very much for having me.
All right. You're welcome. And then we're going to be talking, okay, we're gonna and what we're gonna be talking a little bit about is male menopause. You know, all of us women suffer, but trust me, it's happening to men too, isn't it?
It's very real.
Yeah, definitely. So, and then we're gonna be talking with Tirona. Low Dog, and her book is Life is Your Best Medicine, A Guide to Every Age. So I do want to give away stuff. You know, I love to give back. And so today we have some great giveaways, and the phone number here is 805-419-0008. Leave your name and number and what prize you're calling about. And or if it's easier for you to email me, just send me an email at kim@kimpaganoshow.com. And leave me the same, your name, your number, and which prize you're calling about. So right now, I would love to welcome my guest. And we've got Marcia, who's on her way here, but we do have Sharon Savidson in the studio. How you doing?
Good. How are you?
Great. All right. So we have an amazing weekend again. And, you know, I've got some gifts that I want to give away. We've got some passes, meal passes to the Soup Plantation, which is out here. Actually, I think they're to all of them, but definitely I want to stand behind the one in Camarillo who always supports me. We've got tickets to Frankenstein Slept Here, and that is for October 20th. There's a 1 p.m. and a 3 p.m., and it's a family-friendly film show, and it's all the actors and the cast are 7 to 14 years old.
Oh, wow.
So anyways, I thought that would be fun, and that is over at the Hillcrest Center for the Arts, and so we're going to be giving tickets away for that. Also, this is the last weekend to get in on Circus Vargas, and that is over in Canoga Park, Westfield, Topanga, and that is October 4th through the 15th. So if any of those are something that you'd be interested in, definitely give us a call when we let you know what is happening. So right now, we're going to bring our first guest on, Herbie. And Herbie, are you there?
I am right here.
Hey, how are you?
I'm interested in the male menopause thing. Today's my 52nd birthday.
Oh, happy birthday.
Happy birthday.
Well, we got Roland here that we could talk a little bit about that. I'm telling you, we're all there. Trust me. I already nabbed him as he was walking in the door going, how do I get rid of this, you know? So, you know, I'm really excited to talk about our first your book that you wrote, and tell me a little bit about why that you were so interested in Elizabeth Montgomery.
Yeah, it all started obviously with Bewitched. I mean, I grew up in the 60s, you know, it was a tough time for everybody. We were all looking for magic, and I was picked on a lot as a kid. I was bullied as a kid. I grew up in an inner city, And I just turned to television in general, and there was Bewitched, you know, Magic Answers. I sensed, and I guess I identified with Samantha's sense of isolation. And then when I, you know, grew up, I wanted to be an actor because of the show, and then I wrote a reunion movie for Bewitched after I saw a reunion movie for I, Dream of Jeannie. Elizabeth Montgomery didn't want to do the reunion, but she was interested in the Bewitched books. And so when I wrote the first Bewitched book back in 92, it was published, I knew that one day I would like to talk about her entire life and career beyond Bewitched and after Bewitched. And yeah, because she did so many amazing TV movies afterwards, and she did over 200 TV guest appearances before Bewitched, and that's how it all started.
Herbie, you know, one of the things we were just talking before we got you on our line here is that, you know, she was married. She was the typical mom, right?
Right.
And, you know, and maybe when she got a little upset with Darren, that was her husband, correct?
Correct.
You know, she, like, just kind of gave her a little twitch, and he was off to work or wherever she did what, you know. I mean, and it's kind of interesting. I mean, we all wish that we had a little bit of that magic in our life. And I think, you know, my show's all about positive and you know, living at your highest powers and all that. And
right.
So, you know, it seemed like that was how she was on the show. How was she in real life?
Well, she really was just that down to earth. I mean, that was the amazing thing about her and the show. Samantha loved Darren for who he was and not really for what he could buy her. She could have anything and anybody that she wanted. So she really loved this guy for, you know, for his personhood. And Elizabeth, who was raised, you know, in a very prestigious family, you know, the daughter of Robert Montgomery, the actor from the 30s and the 40s, who did the 50s TV show as well, Robert Montgomery Presents, and her mom was a Broadway actress. But, she, you know, she embraced the regular life, the regular personality, the down-to-earthness, the simple treasures. And then she just transferred that personality on Bewitched, and she made witches likable and believable because she was so likable and believable as a person. It was who you saw in Bewitched is who she really was in real life. She was just the sweetest, kindest person.
Now, I know her father actually didn't want her to go into TV or to do any kind of acting, correct?
That is true. He was initially against it because, you know, he knew what a difficult life it would be. You know, it's not always easy to start out or get ahead or whatever. But when he realized that she was very, very much interested in doing this seriously, he said that he would support her. And then her first acting gig on TV was an episode of Robert Montgomery Presents called Top Secret, in which she played none other than her father's daughter in a scene, in an episode.
All right.
Hi, this is Marcia. I just have a question. You know, celebrities now, they have such a hard time living a normal life. And she was such a phenomena of her time. What kind of life did she have outside of the studio?
Well, it was tough. I mean, you know, she was still an actress, and she was still, you know, in the public eye and wherever she went. You know, in the 60s when Bewitched hit TV, it was like, she was like Farrah Fawcett of the era, you know. Think of a TV star, a major star today like Blake Lively or somebody like that. I mean, Elizabeth was beyond that. She was a superstar. She put ABC on the map, so it wasn't, as much as she craved the regular life, you know, it was hard for her to go out, you know, to a restaurant or whatever. However, when she did, and if she was approached by fans, she was always cordial. I knew I was taking an acting class at UCLA years and years and years ago, and a fellow student used to sell purses somewhere in Beverly Hills, and Elizabeth walked into the store and was, you know, looking at purses, and I guess a fan approached her and loved the purse she had, and she dumped everything out of her purse, and she gave her the purse. So that was the kind of person she was. She certainly had her struggles with her marriages, you know, like everybody does. No one's perfect. We all have issues. And she was married four times, first to Fred Kamen, who was an upper-crust rich man from New York, and then to Gig Young, who was a very troubled actor, and then Bill Asher, who was the producer-writer of Bewitched, and then Robert Foxworth, who's an amazing actor today, and they were together 20 years. So, you know, I mean, it was an actor's life, and yet she was a unique person in that realm.
Right. You know, I just want to remind anybody that's just tuning in right now, you are listening to the Kim Pagano Show every Saturday on 1520 from 2 to 4. And, you know, we're talking about Elizabeth Montgomery. We're talking about Bewitched, one of our old, I mean, it was definitely one of my favorites, you know. And we're talking right now with Herbie Pilato, and his book is... okay, get me the name of it right here. Herbie, can you help me out here?
Sure. Twitch Upon a Star, The Bewitched, A Life and Career of Elizabeth
now,
Montgomery.
What made you name it that?
Well, you know, there was, it just sounded right. I wish I could say it came to me in a dream or something like that, but I just remember it just was there, Twitch Upon a Star. I wanted to get the twitch in there. And there was, you know, Wish Upon a Star, that we all know the song and whatnot. So I thought it was a nice tie-in.
Oh, I like that. Okay, now that you brought it. See, it's always, there's always like a thought behind it, which I love. You know, so since you really, you know, kind of did your homework on this, what were your favorite episodes? I mean, I just want to reminisce for a second. I know I'm thinking of her when she just had her baby in the baby room and all the, you know, the toys are dancing around. And, you know, it was kind of like a Leave It to Beaver, you know, those, it was all along that kind of line.
Yes, definitely. Well, I guess there's a couple of them, but early on there was this, an episode called A is for Aardvark from the first season where Samantha gets tired of going up and down the stairs for Darren, who's like hurt his back or he has a cold or something. And so she gives him the magic so he can, you know, pop up the orange juice when he wants it or whatnot. And by the end of the episode, he realizes that, you know, having things without working for them isn't worth it. And it's really a touching episode. And then later on, they did an episode in the seventh year in which was written by the inner city school of Jefferson High School in Los Angeles by a multicultural class, African-Americans, Latinos, Caucasians, all different kinds of kids. They wrote this episode where Tabitha befriends a young girl who happens to be African-American, and they become friends, but they're so close they want to be sisters, and they're approached by a bully in the park, says, you can't be sisters because you don't look alike. And then Tabitha uses her witchcraft and tries to turn them into the same color, and she ends up with white polka dot, or black polka dots on her and white polka dots on the little girl. It was a monumental episode because it went to the core of the prejudice theme of Bewitched, which is really what Bewitched was about.
And I love it.
Now, why did they change Darren's?
Great question. Yeah, that's right.
Yeah, Dick York was the first Darren, and he had hurt his back in a movie he did years before Bewitched, and he never really recovered from it. And then he became addicted to the painkillers. It was very, very hard for him, and he kept on missing episodes. And so they had to replace him. They didn't want to, but they had to. And then Dick Sargent came along, and Dick Sargent had said that he was the original choice for Darren years before, but he was in contract with another studio, so he couldn't do the show. So when Dick York left, they went to Dick Sargent.
So my favorite thing about Bewitched was that the themes were things that we all deal with, although she dealt with them with magic, but like the nosy neighbor.
Oh, there you go. Yeah.
Things or the mother-in-law. Yeah. Things that you have to deal with in your everyday life, but she had an out.
That's what I'm saying. That's why I thought this was a great interview. If we could all just wiggle our nose for just a little bit. Roland, you really liked the show too, right? What was some of the things that you liked about it?
I don't really remember a distinct episode, but I remember being a young man or boy and definitely wishing I could marry eventually a Bewitched person. That's very handy, I have to say.
I don't know. It could help you and it could not, right? You know?
Well, I remember only the helping.
Okay, yeah, there you go.
It would have to be a good wish, though, right?
Yeah, there you go.
Well, this is Sharon. Well, what if you took a scenario where there was somebody in front of you that was irritating you and you just pretended that you were bewitching them? And it would shift the energy in terms of how you actually shift your energy level in terms of how you view the situation.
Right. Well, and the great thing about the show, too, is that Samantha only twitched as a last resort. She tried to use her wisdom or her wit or her humor to get out of a situation. And then in the last 5 minutes, if some obnoxious character was just not going to, you know, go away, or if she had no other way to help Darren, then she twitched. Because remember, he didn't want her to use the
witchcraft. That's right. Now, what about her mother?
Yeah, her mother was real. I mean, Agnes Moorehead, how can you beat it when you have Agnes Moorehead on your series?
Oh, my gosh.
You know what, though? It always bothered me that Darren didn't like the part of her that was unique.
Well, you have to remember, if Darren didn't object, there'd be no series. Then we would just have a series about a witch. That was the conflict. And the thing, too, is that it was a lot of people don't realize it was her choice to give up the magic life. He didn't force her. She decided that getting everything all the time was okay, but she wanted to live fully. You know, she wanted to experience challenges. And that was the great thing about her as a character. And what was the great thing about this show? The conflict of that.
I love it. It really, like we just talked about, I mean, it really did have some life, you know, episodes that we could all relate to. I mean, even though we were a lot younger, but I mean, even at that time, we could relate to our family members and that kind of thing. You know, what I wanted to ask you is, what is your most cherished memory of meeting with her?
Well, when I first met her, it was so funny because I was so nervous. So I tripped over the coffee table, you know, right at her house. She opened the door, I come in, boom, 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 and I trip. And we laughed about that, and I thought, wow, how cool that this you know, superstar who I'd waited really my whole life to meet was so great and charming and regular. I mean, we walked into her kitchen. She was cooking as we were talking. She had PBS on and Julia Child on the TV as we're sitting there in the kitchen. And she was a regular person. It was so charming. And so I guess it put me at ease, you know, and she was like that. So it was
she was very down to earth.
I can't say it enough.
Really?
She was just that sweet.
So let's just, you know, kind of wrap up with the end of her life. I know that was really hard, but tell us a little bit about the end of her life briefly.
Yeah, she, unfortunately, she succumbed to colon cancer, which she had been sick a while she was doing her last film called Deadline for Murder, and which was a CBS movie based on Edna Buchanan, crime writer, a real-life crime writer in Miami. And she had been, you know, losing weight, and no one really knew why, and she didn't understand why. And this is before the colonoscopies of today. And, you know, they found it too late. And it was really hard for her family, of course, for herself. First she was angry, and then she accepted it, and then she moved on into heaven. And, you know, Robert Foxworth, her husband, had said that she never really wanted to get old, you know. She was 62.
Who does,
when she died.
Right?
Right, exactly.
Yeah.
But still, that was a horrible way to go. And it was hard for me, too, because I had just lost my father a month before and then Elizabeth, so.
Right. Now, what are we going to find in your book, Twitched Upon a Star?
You will find everything about her career before, during, and after Bewitched. She made, over 200 guest star TV appearances on shows like Alfred Hitchcock Presents and Twilight Zone and The Untouchables and Wagon Train, and then all of her movies after Bewitched, Case of Rape, which was one of the top, just brilliant film in 1974, Legend of Lizzie Borden, Mrs. Sundance, The Awakening Land, one of the first miniseries ever to hit TV.
Which Legend of Lizzie Borden freaked me out completely as a child.
Oh, you and me both. I couldn't watch it. I couldn't watch no Samantha killing people. I couldn't take it.
Yeah, and she wasn't twitching her nose there either, right?
No, she wasn't.
Yeah.
She definitely wasn't twitching the axe, yeah, but not the nose.
There you go. Herbie, where do we find your book?
You can go anywhere online, Amazon.com, BarnesandNoble.com, or you can go order directly from Roman.com, my publisher, Taylor Trade, or come right to my website, www.herbiejpilato.blogspot.com.
All right. Okay, I can't wait to get a copy. And you know what? These are memories from our past, and I think they're so fun to kind of reminisce and really see who the person behind that star is, you know, in that series and everything that they've done. So thank you so much for being my guest on my show.
Thank you, Kim, for being such a lovely host.
Thank you. All right. Well, you are listening to The Kim Pagano Show. We were just talking to Herbie Pilato, and his book is Twitched Upon a Star, and it is all about Bewitched and, you know, Elizabeth Montgomery, her life and her history and all that. We're going to take a really quick break, and what I would like to do is give away two family packs to the Circus Vargas over in Canoga Park at the Westfield Topanga. And that is running October 4th to the 15th. So definitely, if you are interested in getting a pack for your family to go out there, Circus Vargas is so much fun, give me a call at 805-419-0008 or send me an email right now at kim@kimpagano.com and you will get your name in for that. We're going to take a really quick break. We've got lots more to talk about, and we're going to bring Eric Papp on, and we're going to talk about his book, Leadership by Choice. So stay with us. You're listening to The Kim Pagano Show.
Those fingers in my hair, that sly come hither stare, that strips my conscience bare, it's witchcraft.
This is your Ventura101.com weekend datebook for October 13th and 14th. Brought to you by The Kim Pagano Show on KVTA, I'm Jocelyn Rohrbach. All weekend long, the Conejo Valley Open Studio Tour and the Ojai Open Studio Tour take place at selected galleries in Ventura County. Also this weekend, the Santa Barbara Seafood Festival happens in Santa Barbara, and the Seaside Highland Games take place at the Ventura Fairgrounds. Tonight and tomorrow, Oxnard's First Presbyterian Church presents a free will offering community concert to benefit Ventura County homeless. Artbeat Second Saturdays happens tonight in downtown Oxnard. Tomorrow, join KVTA's own Tom Spence at the Walk to Defeat ALS in downtown Ventura. And also tomorrow, the Ventura Harbor hosts the Ponies by the Sea Mustang Car Show. For more info about any of these events and even more happening this weekend in Ventura County, visit us online at Ventura101.com or follow us on Twitter at twitter.com/Ventura101.
Welcome back, everyone, and I want to remind you, you are listening to The Kim Pagano Show, and I am your host, Kim, and we in our studio, we've got Roland Reef, and we've got Sharon Savidson, and we've got Marcia Hively, who just joined us. You heard her a little bit in there, but we are having an amazing weekend here, and I hope that you are too, and I will let you know who your winners are. But we've got lots more to talk about, lots more to give away, and right now we're going to bring our next guest on, who is Eric Papp, and his book is Leadership by Choice and Believe in the Value of You. And so, Eric, are you there?
Hey, I am.
How are you?
Hey, Kim, I'm doing fantastic.
Very.
How are you?
I'm great. So, you know, let's just get right into your book. Tell me a little bit about your book.
Yeah, it's called Leadership by Choice, Increasing Influence and Effectiveness Through Self-Management. And
by the way, I just want to thank you. I got a copy of your book, and it actually had a couple $200 in it.
Yeah. Hey, you're very welcome.
I know. They're a little shorter than the normal, but, you know, I love the approach, so I think that's really cool.
Oh, neat. Yeah, and so the book, Kim, it goes into really the four areas of our life: communication, how well we listen, how well we ask questions, how well we speak. Second area being productivity: how productive are we? How focused are we? How well do we understand our priorities? The third area is leading teams or working on a team in terms of how well we establish trust with other people, and also how we engage in healthy conflict. And then the fourth area is personal development, and that is the area of our life in terms of growth. And I really do, I try to, just keep it entertaining, but at the same time very practical, that people can apply this professionally as well as personally.
You know, I talked to you a little bit in our pre-interview, and we talked a little bit about that you grew up in Florida, correct? Tampa, Florida.
Yep.
And that you actually started speaking back in 2006 where your dad introduced you to this, correct?
Yeah. My dad, I went to my first big National Speakers Association conference back in 1996. And then from that, he would say, read this book, check out this, come hear this speaker. And then after I graduated college, I got linked up with a seminar company. And from there, I worked for them as an independent contractor. And things just kind of took off from there.
You know, one of the books that I have to mention, even though, you know, we want to definitely promote yours, but, you know, so many of us, in fact, all of us are reading it right now, is the Think and Grow Rich. I mean, that was one of your ones that really helped you get to where you are today, correct?
Yeah, and it's all about having the mindset. And, I mean, the chapters in there on persistence, I mean, just it's so key. And that book will help you just developing the winning mindset that you can apply to anything in your life. And I actually have a copy of it as well on my phone that I keep it as well, so just during downtime.
Sharon, I know you actually recommend that a lot to your people, too.
I do, and then going through the workbook. But it sounds a lot like you have the emotional intelligence going on in your book.
Yeah, that's the emotional intelligence part I really get into in terms of the leading teams aspect and, you know, keeping our emotions in check and dealing with that. You know, that's a big component of that, and also in communication as well.
So what is the difference between listening and hearing? I mean, that's like right there. You know, you could be sitting there thinking you're paying attention, but is it really sinking in? Is that the difference?
Good question.
Thank you.
You know, hearing, Kim, is the act of your ear perceiving a sound. So right now you might be hearing the air blow through the vent. You might be hearing, you know, somebody type, and you might be hearing somebody in the next room. But listening really requires us to focus. Listening is that understanding. And, you know, I guess to give you another example, it's kind of when people are in an office environment and you have one person pounding away on the keys, another person walks in their office or their cubicle, and they say, hey, I need to talk to you about something. And the person just, you know, keeps typing away at their laptop, and they say, go ahead, I'm listening to you. But their whole time, their eyes are focused on their screen. And so they're not really listening. They're more, in fact, just hearing them. You know, or like they're just kind of hearing what they're going to say. So listening really makes that person feel understood.
So listening is an action.
Right. That's correct.
You know, Eric, I tell people to listen to what someone's saying and what they're not saying.
That's very true.
Between so it's being aware of not only their words, but the other forms of communication, their body language, their eyes, with, you know.
That's so true. Yeah, just what you said, body language, also the tone of voice, and then also, you know, because they might not come out and say it, you know, and that's why the importance of asking questions, because you go a little bit deeper. I look at a question as like an onion. You know, you kind of unpeel one layer, and then you ask another question, you unpeel another layer, so eventually you get down to the core of the issue.
And, you know, I mean, in this situation, we have Roland Reeve here with us today, and he is an acupuncturist, but you do so many other things. You have to listen to people between the lines, too, don't you, in order to help them?
Very much so. Have to listen a lot. I mean, that's probably a key. 80% of healing comes from listening.
And so is it sometimes hard for people to say what they really mean? You know, I mean, you know, the saying goes, say what you mean and mean what you say. But sometimes we don't know how we really are feeling, correct?
Yes, and just it was also said what's not being said is probably an important part of listening, because that's where communication happens most of the times, where they leave out what they actually want to say. But you can hear that in the void.
Wow.
You know, I'll tell you something interesting. When I was getting divorced many, many years ago, and my son asked me a question and I answered, I had just gotten off the phone, and he said to me, are you angry? And I said, no. And he said, your words and your body are not saying the same thing.
Isn't that interesting? And he's young.
And he was young.
That.
Yeah. Yeah. So wow. The incongruency.
I always think of the difference between children listening to a mother and a father. Because a mother can talk to kids. I mean, this is the traditional way, all day long. And then a father can come home and say like four words, and it makes such a big difference.
Meaning like, you better do it. I wonder how that works. And all day long you're saying, you better clean up your room before your father gets home. And then, you know, they walk in and say, what do you mean? You haven't done it? You know, and they're like, we'll do it right now. I promise. I'm like, seriously? How did that work? You know, but it's about really establishing your respect and who you are. And I guess you're saying
no,
all day long we're talking.
No, I think kids get conditioned to listening, not listening to you.
Right.
They're hearing you, but they're not listening to
what
you.
What do they say? Like, you know, you just, what is it? The character,
broke
right?
The records.
Yeah.
Your mouth's moving and all I'm hearing is blah, blah, blah.
Blah, blah, blah. Exactly. So.
And that's something, too. It's like, you know, being in the home front there, the mom, dad, or
or the kids, you know, one of the pointers I always tell people is if you want to tell, you know, your spouse something, you know, once, or you want to tell your kids once, go in that room, make eye contact. But when you yell up the stairs, or when you yell down the hallway, or when you yell in the next room, say, hey, can you take out the trash, or hey, can you do this? The person is usually, they're just so ingrained with what they're doing, you often have to repeat yourself several times. That's what I always tell folks. If it's important, you know, make that eye contact, go over, make that eye contact, and usually your message has a lot higher success rate on getting across.
You know, Eric, I talk about catabolic energy and anabolic energy, positive and negative energy. And when you talk about in the workforce, and truthfully anywhere, the difference between a catabolic leader and an anabolic leader is the positive energy leader will find out what the employee wants and what will help them to
achieve
and be successful. So that also goes into listening. What does the person need in order for them to feel supported and, you know, for them to be successful?
And actually along those lines, I was just, you know, looking at a course where if they explain to you what they want from you, and you actually repeat what it is that they want, because you want to make sure that's really what they're telling you. So then you actually end up, they hear themselves and they're like, no, that's not what I meant to say. Or yes, that's exactly, now I know how I can help you. So it's kind of, I mean, sometimes we need to do that to, you know, to be able to understand where you can really help them.
Yeah.
So now let's say, how does one become a better listener?
There's a lot of ways. I mean, but one of the ways kind of goes back to what I was saying is just making that person your focus. So when your child walks in the room, or when a coworker walks in the room, it's no difference. You give that person your focus and your attention. And you look at them. And now there are times maybe that you can't. So that's why you tell somebody like, hey, I've got 3 minutes now or 15 minutes later. Which do you prefer? Because sometimes we catch ourselves, you know, we say to somebody, oh, go ahead. And we're not even really listening. Our mind is still thinking on the other activity that we're previously working on. And we never fully get their message. So one of the ways is just making simple eye contact and giving that person your focus. Another way is to listen, you know, without putting yourself in the situation. You know, a lot of times when we listen to somebody, then we just go into I mode. Oh, well, when I was your age, or I went through the same thing, and I did that, and I. And then it totally shuts the other person off because we listen, you know, biographically, when really we're not, you know, truly listening.
Wow.
So we can eliminate the biographical listening. That also helps us become a better listener.
You know what? This is so, I think this is like a huge lesson. And I just want to remind everybody that's just tuning in right now that you are listening to The Kim Pagano Show, adding value every day in every way. And right now we're talking to author Eric Papp, but he is also a speaker. And his book is Leader by Choice. And you have to believe in the value of you. I mean, you really do, in order to be able to get out there and sell yourself and run a business and really, you know, be the person of choice, that you really have to be able to really believe in yourself, correct?
Mm-hmm. Yeah, that's absolutely correct. That's where it all starts. I mean, any type of, well, you know, I look at people say sales. Well, everybody's in sales. If you're selling a product, a service, or an idea every single day. And then it starts with having confidence and belief in yourself. Because when you have that confidence and belief in yourself, others in turn will then start to have it in you. And that's ultimately what trust is. You know, trust, if you boil it down to one word, I like to think of that as belief. You know, if somebody says, I trust you, or I trust the Kim Pagano Show, that means I believe in you. I believe in you and what you're about.
Right.
And that's where it starts with.
And you need to really honor yourself and your journey, because if something doesn't resonate with what you believe in, you have to have enough guts to say, I can't put this on my show, or I can't represent this because that's not the direction I want to take it. So I think that it's important to really honor, you know, what direction you want to go in your life.
Yeah. And that's something that somebody mentioned before, or else not, or else it's very incongruent. You know, you're saying one thing, but yet you're doing another one. And people can pick up on that. You know, you're not congruent with yourself.
Right.
I love this in your chapter on productivity. You have the Parkinson's Law. Parkinson's Law states that work expands to fill the time available to us. Isn't that true?
Yeah.
You know, what's interesting, that is so true, because sometimes if I can put a timer and say, I only have an hour to do this. And if I don't put a timer, it could be all day long. I'm stuck in the office or, you know, and I can't get out of there.
Well, they say if you want something done, give it to a busy person.
Yeah, I'm busy. But still, if you don't put it in a compartment and say, I'm going to take an hour to do this and then I'm going to switch gears and, you know, because you can't, you got to kind of work off a list and you've got
to. Well, I think that goes back to setting the intention, Kim. When you're actually setting a goal, you're more likely to achieve the goal versus
kind of like all over the place. Yeah.
There's a very beautiful Hawaiian principle. It says energy goes where intention mm-hmm. goes.
Right.
And so wherever you put intention to, that's also where the energy goes. I like your title, and I'm intrigued to read that book, Eric, Leadership by Choice. Now, I might take that out of context and says leadership for self. I haven't read the book, but is it about self-leadership to self-govern, or is it leadership for outside parties? I'm intrigued by your title, Leadership by Choice, and I was wondering if it's referring to leadership of self, you know, that you actually take the lead for your own life and take leadership for your life, or is it a self-help book for leadership for leaders in a company or in a business?
You're correct on the first one. It's for anybody wanting to make that choice to see themselves as a positive influence and to lead in the four areas of their life. And I look at it like it's a choice. It's not a title. It's not a position, because we've all had those leaders or seen those leaders, people that have vice president after their name or president or manager, and they're not exactly leaders that we would follow.
And the second part of the title is increasing influence and effectiveness through self-management. I think sometimes the only way you can change things is to change the
yourself.
Way you act and react to them.
Yeah, definitely.
Absolutely.
Now, you sit in all areas, and did you call it the four R's?
The four areas were the communication, productivity, leading or working with teams, and then personal development.
So is there a distinct difference in the way that you would work as a team, even though I know you have to work with others, but would your personality actually change?
Your personality, it wouldn't really change. It might modify in order to, you know, for the group a little bit. But at the same time, the biggest thing when you're working with others, you know, on a team, let's say, is to establish, okay, what is the definition of a team? You know, how do we define ourselves? What's the direction we want to go in? And, you know, and do we trust each other? And then, and really the big thing on the team is, okay, can we engage in healthy conflict? Because that's often the sticking point that I see teams in corporations and organizations, is that there's like five people together, but yet they never disagree. And that's not good. Because if you don't have healthy conflict, you almost assuredly have unhealthy conflict. And that's where people come out of the meeting and say, man, can you believe what Kim said? Oh, man, or can you believe what Janet said? Yeah, it's never going to work, you know. And so that's why it's so important to know the dynamics of when you have a high trust team, what goes into that.
So a team, when you would say that, they would say, you know, I don't really agree with you on that. And the other one goes, here's what I think would help better. And so then you kind of go, okay, yeah, maybe. And so it's a discussion, correct? On a communication.
Right. It's more of a discussion, and it's an open dialogue. Without people's feelings, you know, getting hurt, like without people saying, oh, why did you say that? You know, I've been here in this company. I've got 20 years of experience, you know, and how is this person, you know, trying to personally attack me? Or, you know, all that gets thrown out the window, and we're just focusing on the team. We're just focusing on what's the best interest for the team to move ahead to achieve its objective.
Right, right. So I have a question. How does listening help us in our professional life, too? I mean, you know, when we go to different seminars and stuff, obviously you're listening to different speakers, but what's your thought on that?
It helps us in our professional life, whatever profession you are. Like the gentleman there who's a...
Roland?
Roland. Mm-hmm. He does acupuncture, is that right?
Yes, correct, Eric.
Okay, yeah, so that's acupuncture therapy. You know, he has to apply it in his life from the fact that he really has to be in tune with different clients coming in. He can't just look at one client and after they start to tell the story say, oh, you know, thinking is that, oh, okay, I, you know what, I've seen this case a million times. They're just like so-and-so. You know, he truly has to listen to that person and really, you know, make the proper diagnosis and really, you know, connect with them, and also, you know, show the client that, hey, he's, you know, fully engaged and fully listening. Hey, I'm going to take care of your problem here. So, I mean, it applies all across the board. I mean, whether you're a teacher, you know, and you're just getting to know your class, you know, really listening to them, what are their names, you know, that's just a small thing right there. And then also, what are some of their personal goals? You know, what are some hobbies that they're into? And then you kind of maybe build that into some of your teaching methods. You can use analogies and stories to build around that.
Eric, do you think intuition goes into it too? Do you feel like you have an intuition about business?
You mean like do I think people are born with a certain like intuition about certain?
Well, like if you can tell somebody's personality or a feeling that you get about a client or that kind of thing, do you work off of that or is that not your style?
I mean, it can. I mean, if I connect with somebody right away, you know, then it seems to be, you know, that person tends to open up more, and I tend to open up more, you know, in more of a, you know, in a less amount of time.
Right.
But I think you know, I ask a lot of questions as well. If somebody's not readily available, you know, if they're not, you know, just giving the information out that I need to help them in the situation, say at the client, I'm going to come in and do some leadership training. If I still can't figure out, you know, where the problem is, then I'll keep asking the question, and then, you know, so I can get to that core.
I think you have to be careful in this situation of making assumptions, because we all come in, you meet somebody, you have a first impression, you have a thought of what they're, you know, especially if you were in the healthcare industry, and you can assume A plus B equals C, but the fact is there may be something else in the middle of there that is changing the circumstance. So this is when your listening approach is really important.
Right.
That's so true. Yeah, I've got that in my book. That's called, you know, sometimes assumptive listening, and that makes a out of you and me. You know, when we do
this is true. I've told my children that. I just want to remind anybody that's just tuning in right now, you are listening to the Kim Pagano Show on 1520, and we are here every Saturday from 2 to 4. We're talking with Eric Papp right now, and his book is Leadership by Choice, and believing in yourself is a value to you. And so, you know, I know that the generations have changed. How do people in each generation listen differently?
Yeah, so what we've got right now is we've got four generations in the workforce. You know, and we'll start with the veterans, or what Tom Brokaw calls, you know, the greatest generation. And I think those are some of the best listeners out there right now. And those are the people that are ages, you know, like in their late 60s, 70s and stuff, that are still either, you know, working in companies part-time or in some cases full-time. I think those folks are some of the best listeners because they grew up in an era where they listened for entertainment. You know, they listened to the radio as a source, you know, for entertainment. And to see a person, you know, a young person today who's in their 20s sit still to listen to the radio, you know, it's kind of unheard of.
That's,
you
know, very true statement, yeah.
So they really like face-to-face. So they really want to make sure, you know, if you're not, you know, connecting with them and really making that eye contact, you know, and, you know, they look at that as something as, man, this person is really not listening to me. You know, then you move up a generation, the baby boom generation, one of the most competitive generations that we've seen, a lot of them are workaholics. They work a lot. So sometimes they've been, you know, known to multitask. But at the same time, and they've also, from that workaholic type approach, they usually, when the listening aspect, they just kind of like usually like it in certain clumps. They like to, hey, give it to me, you know, all right away. You know, don't tell me a long-winded story. Just tell me what I need to know, you know. And you know, just because they're working, they're busy. You know, they've got this and they've got this, and they're going here, going there. So that's something, a little bit there with the baby boom generation. And then listening for the Generation X. Generation X is the one of the smallest generations. Those are the folks born right around, you know, right about 1967 up in about 1977, 78, around there. And with these folks, trust is a big issue because they were the folks, if you remember, like the latchkey kids, they went, they took care of themselves. You know, mom might have been working one job, dad was working one job, and they came home, they cooked themselves dinner, they made their, you know, they did their homework. So for them, you know, trust is kind of an issue. So you really want to make sure that you build up trust with them. And somehow you demonstrate that, in your listening ability. Maybe you, you know, you say something back, you paraphrase what they said to you, but you really want to build up that trust in the listening process. And then the younger folks, Generation Y, you know, a great way to listen and communicate with them is seeing what they're in tune with. You know, a lot of you can see that they're in tune with, you know, texting. Well, hey, a great way to communicate, you know, is texting. You know, and I don't need to be there face to face per se to listen to them, find out their needs. I can maybe just shoot them a question via text, and they like that a lot better than if I go in their computer, if I interrupt them, trying to find the answer to something.
Wow. So, you really hit it on each one, and look at how we've devolved, I would say it, right? I mean, if we're down to texting, there's no communication whatsoever. And sometimes we need to put down our phones and our, you know, our computers and just engage back in a relationship.
I disagree. I think Generation Y communicates constantly. There is no time where they're out of communication.
Well, it's a 24/7.
Right. And they let a lot more information out into the general world than we do. So in some ways, they're a lot more trusting than our generation is.
Well, yeah, you're right, because of Facebook. And, you know, I mean, they put their whole life right out there for everybody to see, correct?
Yeah, that's correct. And I'll give you another example from this. I had a friend of a friend, you know, young man was telling his mom some vital, some very important information. And, you know, he probably wouldn't have had this discussion if it was face-to-face, but he was able to text her. And, like, he's in, like, the next room over. I think he was upstairs, maybe. And he was able to have this conversation with his parents, or his mom, rather, you know, via text. And, like, you think about that, you know, so sometimes we look at that, we see it as a hindrance to communication, but also, you know, we can see it as sometimes some people weren't necessarily express all their opinions if they were in that same room. So sometimes the text can help us, you know, better communicate with other people.
And there is a way to nurture the listening in your children. One of the things that I did when my kids were young, and they still love today, is we listen to a ton of books on tape. And I'm talking about the classic books on tape, as well as Harry Potter was really big in our house. But what it did was it brought a conversation for our entire, we all listened to it at the same time in the car instead of watching movies. And then we'd have a conversation about what we heard. And not only did it make them better readers, but it made them better listeners.
Mm. I think that's really good, too. Yeah. We did that with our kids when they were younger, too. Like, we would learn math on tapes and that kind of thing, you know, and we would talk about it and see who got the right answer. But, you know, I mean, there's just so many things. The last thing I want to talk about is how does one listen to themselves?
One of my beliefs is that you're able to listen to yourself, and when you turn off all the external stimulation that we have in our society today, and that's, you know, whether that's the TV, whether that's the radio, whether that's your iPod, whether that's your phone or computer, just tuning everything out and really, you know, getting a really deeper sense of who you are and what you're trying to accomplish, or maybe with some of the things that you're dealing with. You know, that's you know, going through, I like to call it, you know, observing the silence, finding answers in the silence, and that's one of my chapters. You know, because you can really, I think the answers, a lot of life's questions that we ask ourselves, you know, the answers that we have, or the questions that we have, rather, they're inside of us, but yet sometimes we don't take the time to really listen and ask them, you know. And so I think really when we, you know, turn off all the external stimulations and really start to, you know, have that silence, you know, some people, you know, like meditation, other people just like to go for a walk, people just like to sit down on a park bench, you know, and watch nature, whatever works for you, but just being able to tune everything out and to tune into yourself.
I like that. Sharon?
I've recorded a 4-minute relaxation technique, which is breathing combined with relaxation. It just gets you into that place of just centering and listening.
Yeah.
All right. Eric, great interview. Where do we find your book?
You can find it on Amazon.com. That's probably the most least expensive route. Or if you want it, like right now, your local Barnes & Noble, If they don't have one, they should have it, but if they don't have it, they can order it there as well. But I always direct folks to Amazon.
So, Eric, you are a leader of organization, and you're a keynote speaker, right? You have done delivered more than 400 professional training programs. What would you leave us with to give us insight on the best way to, you know, improve ourselves and to bring value?
Okay. Well, one of the ways the last things, and this kind of goes back to what somebody said with kids, and I think it's even for ourselves, and that is, at the end of the day, when we stop and we think, what's the progress I've made today? What did I learn today? And I think that's all great, but also ask yourself this: what questions did I ask today?
What questions?
What good questions did I ask today?
Okay.
Because I think a lot of it, that kind of dovetails into just a little bit different topic, but really the quality of our life is dependent upon the questions we ask ourselves.
That's interesting. That's a whole nother topic.
Yeah.
And so...
But it all ties back around into what you're saying, the value of you. When you recognize you're a person of value, you start to ask these important questions.
So we have a couple minutes to get into that. What is it? I mean, tell us what you mean by that.
Well, simply, asking yourself questions, and taking the why can't I to the how can I, or why am I, in this situation, taking it from that standpoint to the how can I, if I were to get in better shape, how could I lose 25 pounds if I wanted to, if I wanted to achieve, this objective, how could I do that? If I wanted to be in the top 1% of salespeople in my company, how could I do that? If I wanted to have, my kids listen to me, how could I get my kids to better engage and listen with me? One of the things, I just heard it today, it was great advice, is to foster their listening skills, is to play, books on tape in the car. Oh, okay. So, and then we can talk about that, and really it can help them with their listening ability, So I think just the questions that, we ask ourselves is very important. And then you'll start to see some of the answers. When you keep these questions apparent and around, then some of the answers will start to pop up.
Wow. I love that. And I wanted to hear what your thought was on that. Now, in your book, you have a 2 minute to write in 20 years of meaning.
I'm referring to there, Kim, the power of a thank you note.
I love thank you notes. Yes, you're absolutely right. They've kind of, I actually think they're coming back, but I think that that's something that kind of went aside.
Yeah, something that takes 2 minutes to write, but yet, the folks in your studio, and I'm sure even the listeners, they all have some type of note, whether it's a thank you note, birthday card, or what have you, or even something related to work, that's over probably 5 years old, And yet it took the person probably 2 minutes to write, but yet we're still holding on to that.
Right. Now, another thing you have in here is 5 ways to hold yourself accountable. So many people want to put the blame on other people, and sometimes you got to look at yourself, correct?
Right. It all starts with you. It starts with you first, and then, establishing accountability and establishing trust with others. Because if you can hold yourself accountable, let's say, for example, I say I'm going to get up at 7 o'clock and I'm going to go for a run. Well, if I, 7 o'clock, let's say the alarm goes off at 6:45 and I hit the snooze button and I don't go for a run, I just made a promise to myself and I broke it with myself.
That's the worst one, right?
Yeah. And if I'm breaking promises to myself, and this is my general kind of just philosophy on this, I can tell if people are breaking promises to themselves, I can almost guarantee them, I can examine their life and they're breaking promises to other people as well.
Wow, I love that. I just want to talk about the 5 ways to hold yourself accountable. And number one is don't overextend yourself, right?
Mm-hmm, yep.
Take action before you speak.
Mm-hmm.
And have an accountable partner. What are you, accountability to your partner. Is that important?
Absolutely. An accountability partner could be something like somebody in your neighborhood that you say, hey, let's meet every morning. Let's walk the neighborhood. Okay, walk or run. Let's do walk first, and we'll kind of build up to that. And let's just start off 3 days a week, or let's just start off 2 days a week, and then from there we'll build up. But, hey, I'm going to knock on your door. You knock on mine if we're not out here by 7 o'clock.
Wow.
And why that's so powerful, Kim, is because as human beings, we will let down ourselves faster than we'll let down somebody else. Like, if I know you're going to be knocking on my door at 7 a.m.,
darn it, I'll be up,
I'm
right?
Going to be out there. Yeah, I'm going to be out there because I don't want to let you down.
That is so true. But if it was just me, I'd be like, 5 more minutes, right?
That's right.
I like it. And then chart your progress. I think that's so smart. That's why I like an eating journal or whatever you're doing, a journal to let you look back on your progress, correct?
Right. And make it simple, too. Don't make it like, you know, let's say you wanted, if you had a weight loss goal or whatever the case may be, or you had a monetary goal, make it simple on how to chart it and start with a small step, you know, and also, you know, have it there. Like, I've got one here in the fridge. Like, I'm doing this thing. I got this great book. I read a lot, by the way. It's 4-Hour Body.
I had him on my show. That's another great one. Yeah.
Yeah. So I'm working on something. One of my goals, and I'm charting. I've just got it on the fridge. You know, it's just very simple, just a way to keep progress, a way to hold myself in check. And, you know, and it feels good just checking that off. Know that I did that yesterday. You know that I'm doing that today. And it's a great way to just keep yourself accountable, because then you look back and also it builds momentum. You know, after you did a week, then you can do the next week. You know, and then after you do that week, and the next thing you know is you've done it for a whole month. And you're really starting to accomplish
that. That's great. And I just want to end with your last one is aim for consistency, not perfection. And that really rounds it up. And I really appreciate that. Eric Papp, I'm going to definitely have you back. Your book, again, is Leadership by Choice and Increasing Influence and Effectiveness Through Self-Management. Thank you so much.
Hey, you're very welcome. It's my pleasure, and thanks so much for having me on.
Absolutely. We'll definitely have you back. You know, I just want to let all my listeners know that we are going to take a really quick break, listen to the news, but we are talking about life is always a choice. And, you know, we've got some other great speakers. We'll be right back. Stay with us. You're listening to The Kim Pagano Show, and I'm going to give away some tickets to Frankenstein Slept Here at 805-419-0008. We'll be right back.